this is Maddie Diaz on Transformation Highway with John Malkin. This is 88.1 KZSC.
This is KZSC 88.1 FM and KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California, Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. Today you'll hear an interview with Chloe Extina. She'll be shooting a new short film titled Arcadia in Santa Cruz in mid-May, and she hopes to include locals in the production. The 25-year-old theater and film writer and director grew up in Oakland and often visited Santa Cruz. She now lives in Brooklyn, and last summer her play Joan of Arc in a Supermarket in California had a successful off-Broadway debut. Extina has made two previous short films, The Ghost of You and The First Taste, and she is a 2023 Sundance Ignite Adobe Fellow. Her new film, Arcadia, is the story of a young woman's sexual awakening infused with the precarity of climate collapse. Here now is Chloe Extina. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are things in Brooklyn?
They're good. Yeah, it's, you know, kind of that weird in between springtime where I can't wait for it to just be warm.
It has been raining here a lot, and I keep thinking we're done with that, and then it rains a little more, and it's beautiful too, and everything's green, and, you know, things are blooming now, but it's still kind of rainy and then sunny and back and forth.
Yeah, no, I've heard. I've heard it's been like raining all over California too, nonstop.
Yeah. Cool. I'm really happy we can talk, and thanks for getting in touch. And I'm excited to talk to you and maybe start by telling me a little bit about your connection to California and Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So I grew up in Oakland, California. Santa Cruz has always been this kind of like dark, magical place to me. I always associate it with rain unless it's the summer, and then I associate it with the beach boardwalk. But it was the kind of place that we would go and like adventure in a lot when I was a kid. Go to the redwoods or to the ocean. And it always represented this like strange crux of California to me, where like all climate like interacts, and it's like it's farmland, but it's also the coast, but it's also like a college town. And there's so many different kinds of people living in Santa Cruz, but it also has this very like timeless feel that it's like, it's very like slow moving and warm and welcoming. And so all of my work deals with California's climate crisis and the backdrop of, you know, the stories that I'm working on. And my last project took place during fire season and a heat wave, and it added to sort of like the chaos of the world. And I really wanted to explore rain season and mudslide season in this piece. So I kept thinking about Santa Cruz. I kept going back to Santa Cruz. It just in my mind, this place is like perpetually raining most of the year.
Yeah, we have been getting a lot of rain this year. And it is this beautiful, interesting place here. And now, I don't know when the last time is that you've been here, but there's more huge buildings being built downtown, and there's more homeless people around town. This disparity in wealth is really much more present than ever. I don't know if that is interesting to you in your filmmaking, but if you want to say more about, I'd love to hear about other films you've made, but say something about Arcadia and this film that you're going to be shooting here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, so Arcadia is a short film I'm doing through my fellowship with the Sundance Institute. And it's about an 18-year-old girl the summer before she leaves for college, who joins a prestigious theater troupe in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and they're devising a play based on this Russian folktale called The Tale of the Little Dog. And throughout her time with the troupe, she's kind of on this hunt for sexual power and blurring lines between prey and predator. So the film, to me, is really about these kind of like blurred spaces as like a young woman in an art space where you're grasping for your own sexual autonomy, but also dealing with like what could be determined as grooming, but also still on your own sort of search for sexual power and the weird lines between, power abused in these spaces, but also the like autonomous sort of perceived power of a young woman and her sexuality. It's set during like a really dark, rainy summer in Santa Cruz. The feel of it kind of feels like an 80s thriller. We're shooting on 16 millimeter too, so that really adds to the effect, even though it's not an 80s thriller at all, but it has this very dark genre feel to it.
Tell me a little more about that. I was reading on your website that you make films that have stories about psychosexual gazes, desire, and California's climate crisis through a magical realist lens. And you've just said a little more about Arcadia. What in, maybe in your own experience, is coming through these films regarding sexuality and abuse of power? And it's interesting, it sounds dynamic that you're coupling that with climate crisis, sort of grappling with these different realms that are affecting people, and you're focused on young women in particular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I've always been interested in magical realism. When I was a kid, I thought like I loved fantasy and sci-fi and genre films, and I thought like that's what I would do, is like I'll make sci-fi and fantasy, but there will be girls in it. It's actually really funny, when I was a freshman in high school, I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer for the first time, and it actually rocked my world, and is probably the most influential like piece of media I've ever consumed for my work, because I realized that you could use fantasy and magic as like a tool to represent sort of these like unspoken feelings of rage. And also like in high school and, you know, throughout my adolescence, I've been very hypersexualized, and there's a lot of rage built up and a lot of nonverbal stuff that like wasn't in the cultural canon to talk about these like intuitive feelings or experiences I was having, or these like tiny, I'm really interested in my work in like things that feel like tiny moments, like isolated moments of time that happen in like a young woman's life that will like forever impact her, like will blow up into like a very sinister effect. So then I really started, just exploring magical realism as a tool to talk about these things. And so I'm very interested in like, especially now and like as I've gotten older, these like nuanced experiences of sex and sexuality for young women, and wanting to sort of dive deeper in and blow up these moments. And sometimes they're just like so specific and so unspoken that the only way that they could be portrayed is through these like magical moments. Arcadia is less magical realism than my previous work, but it has this sense of like sinister magic, in that it's this very wonky fairy tale that is like mirroring this whole film. You know, they're working on this really weird, dark, twisted play, and there's a moment at the very end that turns a little bit magical. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, a lot of what you're saying is interesting, and I kind of want to hear more about everything. The climate crisis being a backdrop. I'm 60 years old, and when I was in my 20s, this idea of save the planet was compelling, and I have been an activist my whole adult life. And now that idea, Save the Planet, is more urgent and almost like we're needing to bail water out of a sinking boat.
Right.
I don't know if that's how you feel about it, and that's why you're bringing this into your films.
Yeah, for me, yeah, I totally didn't answer that part in the last question. But yes, I'm glad that you are bringing that up more, because for me, like I grew up in Northern California, and it's this really beautiful place to me. Like I've traveled and I now live here in New York, and I've never quite found the same like love for nature that is on the California coast. And also like California just feels like its own country, and that there's so many different climates within the state, which I always joke about is like, I'm just trying to like tackle every climate, you know, throughout California with each new project that I do. But I've always been a California girl. I've always really loved California, but as I've gotten older, I started to see, as like all of us did, like the climate crisis at a really escalated level. And the strange part about it is that, you know, fire season became prominent as I was coming of age, and mudslide season, and like torrential rain and heat waves and the drought and everything. And I found that it's a really weird, strange mirror to like my own coming of age and my own relationship to psychosexual gazes, and feeling like, you know, the world of California is as much a character in my work as the literal characters in my work. And I world building is so important to me, and the fact that that is just like a backdrop of my reality, it feels like this mirror of chaos, of like not being able to control this gaze upon you, not being able to control the world around you. And so using that in my work, it's a way that I just want to like put a spotlight up to that and be like, this is like an everyday slice of life experience that like we have as Californians, or what it's like to grow up as a Californian in the past few years. So that's why I'm so invested in that. And I think there's not a lot, there's more now, there's more stuff being made now, like as, you know, the climate crisis feels like more and more intense. But I find that there's not a lot of work that's just showing you the literal crisis, the literal climate crisis, just playing out as it does every day. I have a family friend who, I said something that really impacted me about how like at the end of the day, with everything going on, it's still just another day. It's still, you still just have to take, you know, everything day by day, and your life still goes on, even with all this like ruin and chaos around you.
This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. Broadcasting from the University of California, Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. Today you're listening to an interview with film director Chloe Extina. She'll be shooting a new short film called Arcadia in Santa Cruz in mid-May, and she hopes to include locals in the production. Here again is Chloe Extina. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but what you're saying is making me think of the pandemic. And I was just in a conversation with someone who I bought a coffee from this morning, and no one's talking about the pandemic anymore. Because it's kind of pretty much over, sort of. But the impact was huge. I don't know if it impacted you in a way that is influencing your filmmaking and these ideas.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, keep going.
No, because I feel like this is kind of even odd to talk about. No one's talking about it, even though everyone was freaked out for a year or two or three. And, you know, in a way, it's it's great that humans are really resilient and move forward out of difficult situations, but it's also healthy to reflect on what's happened.
Totally.
I don't know how this has impacted you.
Yeah. And I should say that with that like resilience quote from my family friend, it wasn't necessarily like a positive, like, and we just keep going on. It's still like, this happens on a, you know, it happens on a daily basis and we just keep moving on. And that's the scary thing too. And that's the thing that I want to kind of like hold up, especially in like the generation I'm coming up where there's a lot of doom and dread about it. But yeah, totally. I think when you talking about the pandemic reminded me of the last film I worked on, Before Arcadia, that took place during fire season, and a heat wave, was directly inspired by, I was junior in college. I had just like come and moved back with my parents in Oakland, and it was a heat wave in Oakland and during the summer. And we don't have air conditioning. And so it was really horrible. And then the fires broke out in Santa Cruz, actually. And it was so funny because that weekend, you know, it wasn't funny, but it was bizarre because that weekend we were actually planning on going to like a weekend trip to Santa Cruz. And I had been looking forward to that for months because I was just stuck and trapped in this, you know, in our house. And so the smoke was hitting Oakland really bad too. And it was like 400 AQI. You obviously like can't leave the house to go, you know, to go get air conditioning because it's COVID. So all of our windows are closed. We had to like take my mattress. I slept in the attic at my parents' house and we had to like take the mattress and put it in the living room. And I had this like total breakdown where I was like, okay, like there's no end to the pandemic in sight. The world around us is like literally like deathly. I just was like, I don't see my future. And so while I'm not like making work that's directly about the pandemic, I think that so much was riled up during that period. And that moment was like, this is like a great example of it. But like, and also like during the pandemic, I really reevaluated my work as a filmmaker and like how I wanted to move forward and what my model of success was, weirdly like distilled it down to like, I'm less concerned with like a traditional model of success. And I actually just want to focus on like, I want to have like a community I'm proud to have like created or impacted, like work that I'm proud of and like, you know, time with like my family and friends. And that was just like a result of like so much stress and upset and literal death during the pandemic. And so that we don't talk about it as much because I don't think, you know, because I'm not making work that's like directly about the pandemic, but I do think it's like so, so inspired. And I also think that we will see more work about the pandemic in the next like few years. But I think there was a certain point where people just didn't want to see that like immediately after the pandemic, like people didn't want to interact with it, even though it's like literally what is happening because it was too painful. But I do imagine that we'll see more of it. And we're still seeing like the effects it is having on our communities. I mean, we're less in person. We're less, there's less spaces to gather. So that is, I don't know. It all really melds in this strange pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. And I think we will see a lot of stories eventually from hundreds of different perspectives that people live through during that and how it's affected them. I like the idea that you're aware in creating your own model of success. That's really interesting. And I don't know if that ties into another realm that I would like to hear about, and that's feminism. Mm-hmm. And the idea of psychosexual gaze, psycho and sexual together. And I'm thinking you mean the way that probably mostly men are looking at or communicating mm-hmm. with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that you probably mean also the amount of media that we're exposed to that does hypersexualize women to sell products usually or sell ideas. Mm-hmm. Say something more about all of that.
Yeah, to me, I feel like a lot of conversation we have about the male gaze is an external gaze, like what we can literally see as like, you know, the way that women's bodies are perceived or talked about, or the way that women are perceived and talked about. But what I'm really fascinated with is the way that that gaze becomes internalized by women. So my last film, for example, was about a 16-year-old girl who, like, after her and her sisters are playing at a creek and they're like photographed by a strange man, she starts having these visions of this sheet ghost, this like ghost in a bed sheet, like watching her, and her also kind of like manipulating that gaze to try and feel empowered or try and feel like maybe she's attracted to the ghost or maybe the ghost is interested in her. And that was based on my experience, like as a teenage girl, always picturing men watching me and being so confused as why I pictured men watching me. And I thought I was crazy. And then as I spoke more about it, as I got older, I realized it's a very common phenomenon. It's what Margaret Atwood calls male fantasies of like women literally picturing the voyeur, like watching them and like existing in this space where you're always thinking about the way that you're being perceived and how that affects just your day-to-day life and your day-to-day relationships. And for Arcadia, an example like of psychosexual gazes is like, I'm really interested in the way that this main character, Juliet, like takes in, you know, this sort of sexual exploitation around her and kind of craves it. I think we also, there's a tendency, I think right now in the culture to focus on like a moralism, and it's a little sex negative, I think post Me Too movement, in a way where I'm not saying that like I am, you know, I am like so pro Me Too movement, but I think people are scared to touch like more nuanced experience, like nuanced like pieces about like complex women and their complex relationship to sexuality. So I'm like interested in, for Arcadia, an example, like where her own sexuality merges with the sexuality placed upon her and investigating that a little bit, which I think we're so interested in a culture as like predator and victim dynamic. But I think, you know, especially because it's from her point of view at the time that she's experiencing it, It's not so cookie cutter, and it's never so cookie cutter. It's kind of blurred what her own relationship is to her body versus other people's relationships to her body. So that's really where the psychosexual gaze comes in. My first film too was about this sort of intersection between child and sex object, and not being able to have an in-between for being a child and then being a sex object. So I'm constantly investigating that. I think as my work progresses, I'm like digging deeper and becoming more blurry, becoming more muddy, becoming less like, here's the firm takeaway from this, and more just like, here's the image, you know?
Yeah. And letting people decide what it means for them. Yeah. Interesting. I love hearing about the inner ideas of what you're working with. And let's go to more about the production of Arcadia and what you're happening in Santa Cruz and what help you might need from local people when you're shooting it.
Totally. Yeah, we're shooting May 19th through the 22nd. We're right now, our like one confirmed location is we're shooting at Monty's Log Cabin in Felton, California for our dive bar scenes. But right now, and actually my producers are going on yet another location scout this weekend, we are in search of like unconventional theater spaces or like barn spaces that could be converted into a theater, and also a farmhouse. Our film takes place in these three locations, in a dive bar, in the theater, and also like a big part of our story is Juliet and her mother's relationship that takes place in the farmhouse. And we're really interested in bringing on locals to our project, like any local filmmakers who, you know, have grip experience, have gaffing experience or sound experience. We'd really like to partner with the community and bring on bring on people to our production. Yeah, we also have a lot of like, I'm somebody who loves to like bring in as many people into the world, really build up the world. So there's a lot of extras in this. There's a lot of members of the theater troupe. So I'm just really curious as to like what people are, other people are interested in and can sort of bring to the film.
This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California, Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. Today you're listening to an interview with film director Chloe Extina. She'll be shooting a new short film called Arcadia in Santa Cruz in mid-May, and she hopes to include locals in the production. Here again is Chloe Extina. Tell me about Sundance and your connection to Sundance. I think a previous film maybe showed at Sundance, and now you have money from Sundance to help finance this film, Arcadia.
Yeah, well, I'm a Sundance Ignite Fellow. So that's the Sundance Ignite program is for filmmakers ages 18 to 25. So my previous film, Ghost of You, the one that takes place during fire season with the sheet ghost, that was selected as a part of the fellow cohorts, me and nine other fellows. And we have like... we are so lucky to like be able to work. We've worked with Sundance for the past year of just like workshopping our stuff in person and virtually. And then we went to Sundance and screened our films there. And so now they're supporting me and working on Arcadia, which has been awesome.
And you're shooting on 16 millimeter. Mm-hmm. So in this day when, you know, cameras now shoot really good quality digital video, why are you shooting on 16 millimeter? And I think you had told me that you will transfer the film to video for editing.
Yes, we will digitize it to edit it. I know it would be so cool to just like literally physically edit it, but that's a long, strenuous, expensive process. Yeah, I've always wanted to shoot on 16 millimeter. My other films have been like color graded with a lot of film grain to sort of give that romantic, nostalgic feel to it. I feel like so much of my work feels like memory, feels like nostalgia, that's really important to me. But I never was like, oh, like we don't have like the money to do that. And then I'm working with this DP, Victoria Campaigner. And when we were talking about the project, she was like, you have to shoot this on 16 millimeter. She was like, your entire lookbook is stills from 16 millimeter projects. And, you know, there's this really like dark nostalgia in the film. And also like it's inspired by these like really gritty feminized worlds, like that of like Karen Kiwisama and Andrea Arnold and Catherine Hardwicke. And with that, there's this kind of like the film, like I said before, it almost has this kind of like 80s thriller vibe to it that we're like paying homage to these like thrillers that you weren't sure if they were a thriller, but they became a thriller at the end. And so she was just so encouraging that we do it. And it turns out that like when you're shooting on film, a lot of people will want to help you out and give you discounts because it's not so common anymore in the film world. So people are just really excited to like be a part of it. Yeah, which has been awesome.
Would you say a little about the actors and actresses that are involved in the project and how long a film do you expect it to be?
Yeah, so the film's going to be about right now it's 19 pages. So it's going to be anywhere between like 15 to 20 minutes, just depending on how the edit turns out. Our lead actress is my really good friend, Lucy Urbana, who I actually grew up with in Oakland, and she worked on my past film, Ghost of You. She's an amazing actress, and this is such a difficult role in that it's like somebody who both needs to be young and appear young and feel 18, but also has this kind of sexual deviance to them that's like hard to pin down. It's hard to do both. And, you know, I didn't necessarily write the film being like, it's going to be Lucy, but there was something in the back of my mind that was like that. And then when we went to cast, I was like, there's just nobody else who could do it. Like, she was just this beautiful fit. And then I'm really lucky that we are working with Maria Dizia, who's playing the mother, who's playing Amy in the film. She's really lovely. And her and I both come from theater backgrounds. So we really bonded about that. So she's coming out from New York with me. And then we're working with Logan Miller, who's a really awesome guy, and he mostly does comedic relief. And for this, it's going to be a little bit of that, but also a little bit darker. So I'm really excited to work with him on that. And he's really excited to do all the movement that comes with it. And then we're working with my favorite musician, Alaska Reed, in one of the supporting roles. And she's also scoring the film with a good friend of mine, MJ Upstairs. So I really, really lucked out with this cast. And we also just cast as the theater director, Lucas Nierverbrugge, who just did a play at Berklee Repertory Theater and is the artistic director of Mendocino Theater Company right now. So we're bringing people from all over, and I'm really excited. I think they're all really enthusiastic about it.
That's exciting. Congratulations. It's really amazing. Yeah. Chloe, would you say a little bit about how you got into filmmaking? I think you studied film at UCLA. I'm not sure. And your films, and I think you wrote some theater pieces too, and your films often have to do with theater.
Yeah.
Just tell me about your filmmaking history and about including theater in your films.
Yeah. So theater is my first love. I actually studied playwriting at UCLA and I minored in film. And I've always done theater since I was a kid. I ran a theater company in high school and I had this little tiny theater troupe in elementary school that we would perform at the local library. It's just something that I've always loved. And it's also something that's always felt very accessible when you're growing up to do theater. And when I was 14, I won the Berklee Rep teen playwriting competition. And so they actually, the teen council produced my play. And it was the first time that my work had been to that scale and taken so seriously. And I realized this is what I want to do. I knew I wanted to do theater and film. I knew I wanted to do writing. I kind of made the connection, but it was more nebulous. And I was like, it's collaborative storytelling. That's what I love. I love bringing on a piece that other people can add on to and make better and interpret. And it feels really real and awesome in the process of making it. And then film was just always something I wanted to do, but hadn't quite tapped into until I was in college. And I made my first short film after I worked at a production company for a while, and I had a really strange and awesome experience where I got to work on a film from pre-production to post-production and worked really closely with the director of that film, who has been super helpful with Arcadia also, Tara Mealy. And so she just watching her work made things feel really possible and real for me. And just, I made my first short and then I made my second short and then became a Sundance Fellow. And I still do playwriting. I did a play in New York this summer that got some cool attention, and we're working on remounting that now too. It was called Joan of Arc in a Supermarket in California. And theater is just so special to me that I can't help but not write about it in my film work too. It's just such a specific environment that I've always, that I grew up in and still work in, and the dynamics in it are so different than just real world dynamics that I can't help but keep exploring it.
I imagine that you envision making a feature length film. Do you have ideas for that? And are you moving in that direction?
Yeah, I am. I'm hoping after Arcadia, the next project will be a feature. It's likely going to be either an extension of Arcadia or in that same kind of theme, same kind of vein. I also was toying with a feature version of my previous film, Ghost Studio, that I'm still working on, but it's a little bit more ambitious for a first feature. So I would love to do something a little bit more lo-fi and contained in one space as my first feature project, which is why I imagine doing an extension of Arcadia.
Something's occurring to me about Arcadia. Mm-hmm. Why do you call it Arcadia and not Santa Cruz, for example? why are you not shooting it in Arcadia? Why is it called Arcadia?
Yeah, it's called Arcadia because of the utopic definition behind like the Greek Arcadia, but also for me, it's that and this like idea of utopia and Juliet, the main character, like really wanting to be an adult and wanting to be seen and wanting to like move up in this theater troupe and like reach this sort of like utopic, cool vision of herself. But also to me, Arcadia has a double meaning because it also represents Arcadia, California, which has been afflicted by the climate crisis and fire season a lot. And so this idea of it also being like dystopia in this way, like it's a utopia, but it's also a dystopia at the same time, where throughout the film, Juliet is kind of misled or misguided in like what is safe and what is not safe.
I want to ask you one more thing, because I think you might have something to say about this, and it's just occurring to me now regarding feminism and masculine and feminine roles. When, for example, when women started being able to be in combat roles in the U.S. military, this was heralded as like a step up in feminism. Mm-hmm. So women gaining roles of power in traditional structures, some feminists consider that a gain. And I don't. And I wonder how you perceive, I guess, you know, this notion you brought up earlier of coming up with your own model of success. What is success in feminism in this world that is still white male controlled?
Oh, wow. That is such a big question, but that is a really cool question. I think,
like, to add to that, like, is it really genuinely beneficial that more leaders of countries are women and that leaders of corporations are women?
Oh, I see what you
if they're becoming more like men in that process.
Oh, that's a great question, because, you know, I grew up in a very feminist Marxist household, and it has never been my belief that like capitalist feminism is feminism, or, you know, racist feminism, like that doesn't exist. You know, like, I don't think that, I don't think you can be one thing without being everything. You know, I don't think you can be a feminist without being anti-racist, anti-capitalist, and also like anti-environment. You know, I think you have to be minded of all the things and all the systems in play and how they overlap and how they intersect. But it is so fascinating that you bring this up, because I was just thinking about this, about how sometimes female directors are encouraged to be more masculine in order to be taken seriously. And that has never been a truth for me. Obviously, like, I'm someone where I'm like, I have feminine qualities, I have masculine qualities. I actually think that like my femininity is really helpful as a director. It really allows me to like tap in to the people around me and make sure I'm like taking care of them. And that is also a huge factor in me in terms of this model of success, is like, I don't think I'm successful unless the community I'm working with feels like heard and seen and taken care of. And yeah, so I've been thinking about that a lot, and also like how I use my femininity. I feel like this is kind of similar to the film, and like using your femininity as a tool for certain things in this sort of like in this patriarchal world where like kind of using the system to your advantage in this weird way where, like, is it actually to your advantage? I don't know. Like, you know, so I've been investigating that a lot. But yeah, I don't think that, like, female CEOs are ever the answer. I think also feminism has been commodified specifically in the last few years as, you know, like a marketing tool or a capitalist tool. And I don't think it serves anyone or serves anything. I think it's just, like, further, like, patriarchal and, like, capitalist control as a tool. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks.
Yeah.
Great conversation. Thanks for making time to speak with me. I appreciate
it. Thanks for speaking with me. And thanks for, you know, connecting with me. It's been really great. I super appreciate it. And I really appreciate, like, the lengths of which you've, like, been willing to talk with me. Let me know when the radio is out. I know my dad's going to want to tune in. So...
Thanks so much, Chloe.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. Enjoy the rest of the day out there.
You too.
Okay.
All right. Talk soon.
Bye. You've been listening to an interview with Chloe Extina. She's a 25-year-old theater and film writer and director who grew up in Oakland and often visited Santa Cruz. For more information, check out chloeextina.com. Her first name is C-H-L-O-E, and her last name is X-T-I-N-A.